I'm James Hahn II.
And I'm Mark LaCour.
And you're listening to This Week in Oil and Gas. This is the podcast for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Welcome in, Mr. McClure, Mark LaCour.
Thank you, James. You think you get my name right after all these years?
Yeah. You know, I'm working on it. If nobody's ever heard of this show before, if you're a first-time listener, thank you for tuning in. It's amazing. We're getting all kinds of positive feedback. I'm from a company called what's the name of my company? Tribe Rocket. I'm from Tribe Rocket. We are brand architects for next-generation oil field leaders. And Mr. LaCour, what do y'all do?
We're ModalPoint.com, and we are true market research in the oil and gas industry.
Perfect. Okay. And he's got his research done this week because I just tee him up all of these articles and we go through them in under 20 minutes, starting with Mr. Putin. Putin's Mideast gains Trump $27 billion loss from Iran agreement. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so what's going on is Putin has figured out that he would rather have an ally in the Middle East. So he's actually supporting the Iran deal. But by supporting this, it's going to increase Iran's oil production, which then is going to hurt Russia. So he was in a bad situation from a financial point of view to make this decision. Now, let me tell you the backstory that you won't hear a lot of people talk about. So back during the Syrian war, Russia found itself on the wrong side of the fence. So on the opposite side of Saudi Arabia, which is, of course, a strong supporter of the U.S. And ever since then, they've literally had no play in the Middle East. And so this is a chance for them to actually get some political ties in place that will help them with Iran and Iran's allies. So this is a short-term financial loss for Russia, but a very smart strategic long-term move.
So they're trying to they're like, yeah, we'll lose this little battle, take a few pawns, and we're gonna keep advancing up the board here.
Yeah, so think about it. So Russia's economy is dependent on the sale of its oil and gas products. Who better to have in your back pocket than a strong member of OPEC? I mean, that's a little scary if they manage to pull this thing off.
Yeah, well, not to mention they sell all kinds of guns to those guys anyway.
Another whole story.
That's a 30-minute podcast every day of the week. All right, cheap oil's winners and losers in one giant map. I just like the one giant map thing, so let's run through it.
Yeah, this is great. If listeners get a chance, you ought to go check out this link. Very quickly, you can grasp who's the winners and losers from an economic point of view for this low oil. You know, everything in green, like Europe, USA, Asia, we're benefiting from this low crude oil prices. Some other countries are actually hurting, the Middle East, North Africa, you know, and then some countries are sort of in the middle, you know, Canada, Norway, Latin America. So you can really see how this has been a stimulus to, you know, Europe and U.S., but it's hurting the Middle East and Russia. And then some countries are kind of on the border.
And if we could quickly, why are some people winning and some people losing?
Well, I mean, think of it here in the U.S. This cheap crude price is leading to cheap gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel prices, which means people are driving more, which means they have more free money to spend on other stuff. So the economy takes a nice hit up. You know, we talked about this the end of 2014, how this was going to be a roar for the American economy, these cheap crude prices. Mm-hmm. Same way in Europe, as opposed to countries like Russia and the Middle East, who depend upon the high cost of oil to generate money for their governments. And it's not there right now. It's $54 a barrel, I think, today. So that's the differences.
I'm just sort of noticing a trend here. The ones that are in the green happen to be the more free economies in the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. So when you have a free market in place, things happen such as price of crude goes down, price of gasoline goes down, people drive more. As opposed to governments that don't have a free market where they subsidize the cost of fuel, so they artificially limit the market's ability to respond to the price of crude, and that works, it trickles its way through the economy. Not to get all political, but at least in the oil and gas industry, free market rules.
Yeah, well, let's say every industry, every country around the world. I'll say it on behalf of Tribe Rocket, free market, baby. Let's represent. All right, Falklands. I wanted to bring the story back around because, interestingly, if anybody listened to, I think it was episode 4 or so, it was a couple episodes ago anyway, you made the interesting point that we'll see if this stirs up any, this discovery they made off the Falklands, we'll see if it stirs up any controversy, and it seems that it has. So what's going on?
Yeah, so what happened is this UK, couple UK companies made a pretty significant fine off the Falklands. And of course, like we predicted, all of a sudden when there's money involved, people are start raising their hands saying, no, you know, Argentina claims that as that territory. Well, unfortunately, Argentina, the UK kicked your butt in about, I think, 17 minutes of the Falklands War. So it's still their territory. And the reason this
okay, yeah, because I didn't make that connection. So that was against Argentina. So now Argentina's coming back.
Yeah, they're it's actually almost comical. So they're threatening legal action because their war didn't work out very well. So now they're going to threaten legal action. The truth is they want access to those assets, right? Now, the companies that found it, which are UK companies, have decided to put everything on hold. And that has nothing to do with Argentina threatening legal actions. It has to do with the price of crude. They're making a very smart decision. They know the crude's there. They know what their production figures are looking like. They know that if they go into production right now, they won't make much money. Why don't you wait till the price of crude goes back up, go into production, and make more money? So that's what's going on.
Right. But but from that same perspective, it's like, yeah, go ahead, sue us. You know, we've got time to kill here. You know? All right. What about this IEA chief economist? It's switched to a subscription link on me, but I don't know if you had a chance to read it before that. No immediate oil market impact after Iran deal. What's going on?
Yeah. So I didn't get a chance to read it, but I can tell you exactly what's going on.
Yeah, please do.
It's what we've talked about for a while. So if this Iran deal goes through, which it looks like it will, it's going to lift the sanctions on Iran, which is going to allow them to start exporting crude. And they're a major crude exporter. But it's going to take them a while to ramp up operations. So even if the Iran deal went through today, it would be second quarter of next year before it actually really started impacting crude prices. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on in the Middle East, I think, on another article.
Yeah, because I was just about to deep dive into that. And actually, it's the next one kind of ties in with that because, yeah, we're talking Iran deal like everybody knows what it's about. So let's shift over here. Low oil and gas prices are unlikely to dent most global project finance ratings for now.
Yeah, we talked about this on one of the other shows. So there's a bunch of large CapEx funded projects, not just oil and gas projects. And I'm speaking about oil and gas projects, but large CapEx projects out there that are going to take place even with these low crude prices for a bunch of reasons. One is interest rates are really low right now, so it's capital is cheaper to get a hold of. Number two, if you have a 30-year deep water project, you really don't care what the oil price is for 1 or 2 years, right? You want to look at what it's going to be, you know, over the lifespan of that project. So this is a good article saying how even though the low crude prices have impacted part of upstream, a lot of these mega projects are just going to keep moving forward, which is good for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. And so let's touch on that because I don't want to stray too far. What is the Iran deal about?
So Iran is basically, for years, Europe and the U.S. have suspected they are trying to go nuclear, as far as nuclear weapons. They keep saying that what they're doing is trying to generate electricity from nuclear. So the difference is the quality of the uranium enrichment, right? You need X times 2 uranium enrichment to make electricity. You need X times 100 uranium enrichment to make a bomb. So the whole deal is about us being able to go in and inspect their enrichments facilities to make sure they're not making weapons-grade uranium and plutonium. And so it looks like we've actually come to a deal, and I've actually read it in detail, and it looks legit. Now, what's going to happen if they decide to kick our inspectors out like they did a few years ago? You know, I hope at that point, whatever, political organizations are in place around the world takes, you know, quick and severe action if that happens. But I think the deal's fair. I think the deal's fair for everybody.
So that's interesting then, because all of these podcasts that I do are an education for me. It's just as much as anything. And in myself being a complete nuclear novice, I always get made fun of for not saying that right. The thing for me about that is I didn't understand that as far as weapons grade, and so I could see that's why I guess there's a lot of people that react. They're like, well, they can't have anything nuclear. But that makes sense then. So if as long as you're not going to be making nuclear bombs, right?
Right. And there's not really a gray area right there. The science has existed since, World War II. We know what it takes to make nuclear weapons, what it takes to make sure you can't make nuclear weapons. And so the International Nuclear Agency, I think is the name of the organization, has actually done a really good job writing the legalese around this deal that, you know, it's very specific. You can only enrich to X amount. You can only have X amount of uranium enrichment facilities in your country. So it's a good deal.
Nice. Okay. Thanks for clearing that up. Let's clear up some other BS. Time to end fuel subsidies, because as you know, as well as I do, Mark, we have, 175% profit margins in this industry, and we are just swimming in coins like Scrooge McDuck. So what's our friend from the Huffington Post talking about?
Yeah, it's so audience, the oil and gas industry does not make 175% profit, right? But what this article is talking about is there are certain countries that subsidize their fuel. A good example is Venezuela. It's literally pennies a gallon for gasoline over there. Venezuela does that so that its people can afford to buy gasoline. Now, unfortunately, if you think about most of the world, that's really not fair. It sounds like a good thing, but what happens is the rich are usually the ones that can afford cars, right? So the rich get the better benefit out of the government subsidy. The poor people usually take public transportation, so it doesn't help them at all. And then it, like we talked about earlier, it's not free market. So the suppliers and the developers can't respond to global price change. Just not a good deal. So what's happened, and you and I talked about this before, is because it's low crude prices, all of a sudden it's actually cheaper to make gasoline. So a lot of governments around the world that normally subsidize took this as a chance to end subsidizing the fuels, because they could do it without a huge price increase at the pump so that people wouldn't have a conniption fit. I think it was Nigeria a while back that actually ended subsidies, and literally the entire country went on strike and the government had to bring it back. Well, now Nigeria's done it again, but the country didn't even notice because it's actually so cheap to make gasoline right now.
Wow, so that's amazing, because I teed it up as if they were going to be talking about our tax breaks.
No. This is all about ending fuel subsidies in the rest of the world. We don't have it in the U.S., so it's not anything that affects us.
Okay, well, just for the heck of it, I'm going to throw in a link from Ken Cohen from Exxon about how much taxes we actually pay in this industry, just because I want to rant about that.
As an industry in the U.S., the oil and gas industry is one of the higher tax industries. And just to correct a lot of misconception of the public, there are none oil and gas subsidies, right, in this country. What there is some tax breaks that allows you to basically write off your research and development dollars and your manufacturing facilities, that allows you to depreciate your equipment over time. No different than what the automotive industry gets. In fact, it's the same law. So, you know, it's a little aggravating to me when I hear people that don't know what they're talking about ending the subsidies on oil and gas. There are no freaking subsidies to oil and gas.
Right.
We make our money the hard way. We work our ass off for it.
Right. Yeah. And I love it too, because the CPA who I found, thanks to you telling me to get a CPA, not an accountant, but she broke it down for me. I said, how do I pay the lowest taxes? She said, it's all BS, basically. She said, you're either going to pay them now or later. You just have to decide where you're going to pay them. And I knew that she was right, because it's like, yeah, well, when it comes to the oil industry, that's kind of how it works. It's like, yeah, we get a break over here, but you should see how much tax we pay over here.
Right.
You know? All right, moving on with the dog barking in the background. How much does it cost to produce one barrel of oil?
Yeah, this is a great article. It's a great read for somebody that doesn't understand how the dollar moves in this industry. Basically, the author, which was Christopher Oblinger, I believe, did a really good job on looking at all the cost that goes in getting oil out of the ground. And a lot of people don't understand there's different buckets of cost. So you have your exploration cost, literally your cost to go find this stuff somewhere in the world. You have your lift cost. Your lift cost is the cost to get that oil out of the ground and up on the surface. And then you have your what's called non-income related taxes. These are taxes like at the state and federal level that has nothing to do with you making money. It's just they either tax you at the wellhead or tax your equipment or whatever. And so this author put all this stuff together looking at something called BOE, which stands for barrel of equivalent. So you can, this way you can measure gas and crude oil comparatively to each other by how much energy, how much BTUs it releases. And so it was interesting to look at ConocoPhillips, Eni, Statoil, and what their actual costs were per barrel of oil. And it's nice to see that, you know, companies like ConocoPhillips, you know, they do really well. I mean, really well in their exploration costs, and they do not so well in their lifting costs. So it's you know, you can see the competitive differentiators between those large oil and gas companies.
Sorry, I got distracted by the dog trying to shoot a nasty look out the window. Yeah. But this is interesting, though, because it goes along with the an interesting presentation I've seen from Alan Gilmer at Drilling Info a few different times, where he talks about kind of the things that you and I hit on offline sometimes about operational efficiencies. And, you know, there are certain operators who it doesn't matter if they have A-grade acreage in, for instance, the Eagle Ford versus C-grade acreage, they will outperform all other operators because they're that much better.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
So it kind of hits to that point, which is that, you know, there's a lot before you go invest in an oil stock, not that we're investment experts or anything, but there are indicators that you can look at that say, you know, if someone comes, hey, you know, there's this well in Texas, you know, if you got $100,000 put down and it's a lower buy-in or whatever, before you go pulling that trigger, maybe find out what kind of returns they get versus everybody else in that same acreage. And this would be a similar sort of a story through up, down, or up, mid, and downstream.
Yeah. So absolutely. You have good operators out there. We've talked about this a whole bunch in the show that make money no matter what. And you have bad operators that quite honestly aren't going to make money no matter what.
Right.
And you have all the people in between. So yeah, this is the article. It just kind of gives you the facts behind that.
So this is the next one. Kinder Morgan raises dividend, looks for more deals. And I brought this one up because I saw a few different articles this week of companies that I think traditionally more in my mind fall in the E&P category. And I've seen some much smaller than Kinder Morgan. They just raised $4 million, or, you know. So there's a lot of money still being raised, and I just, you know, wanted to bring up Kinder Morgan to highlight that point. So what's going on with this deal, though?
Yeah, and we've talked about this before too. The pipeline companies have they're not on a rocket ride strip. They have very strong growth for the next couple of years, and so anytime you have strong growth, you have good cash flow. And anytime you're a big company like Kinder Morgan, then you start looking at acquiring stuff. Because sometimes it's easier to enter a new market by buying a competitor, right? And that's what's going on. And this is, you know, nothing that's not expected. You know, Williams is looking at purchasing a lot of assets. Kinder Morgan's looking at assets. So you need cash. So you raise dividends to raise cash. So, you know, good for Rich Kinder. He runs a tight ship. I actually know him. And you know, good that he's out there making acquisitions and growing the might of Kinder Morgan.
Nice. Nice. And now we've got got some midstream talk, wrapping up the non-satirical articles that we have here. Refiners bask in mini golden age as motorists clock up miles, and I guess this is exactly what we talked about at the beginning.
Yeah, this is so actually a downstream story. So
okay,
Yeah, it's okay. The refineries, and we've talked about this, are rocking and rolling. Their raw feedstock, which is crude natural gas, has been cut by 40%, and then people are driving more. And then when I say refineries, most people think fuels, jet fuel, diesel, gasoline, but it's also stuff like fertilizers, petrochemicals, plastics. And it is just crazy, crazy, crazy busy in that part of the downstream market right now. I mean, there is money everywhere. They can't hire enough people. I mean, it's just it's on a rocket ride straight up, and it's wonderful.
Awesome. Yeah. So if you think that there aren't jobs, go downstream, people. All yep. right, and we got to make fun of our boy, Mr. Biden, because unfortunately, election season has already started. But we're only going to have so much more of this beautiful, beautiful thing that is our Vice President, Mr. Biden. So we've got the Onion, the Weekly Onion, shirtless Biden washes Trans Am in White House driveway. Check it out, folks. I'm going to drop that in the links. But before I run out of time talking about that story, we've got some OTC talk. What's going on, Mark?
Yep, OTC, Offshore Technology Conference, the biggest offshore conference in the world, the fourth largest trade show of any kind in the world, taking place here in Houston, Texas, May 4th through 7th. If you are in oil and gas or you want to be in oil and gas, your butt better be there. We'll be there. It's a wonderful event. We expect over 100,000 people to show up. And James, you know what? Maybe we should do something special for our listeners.
Let's do it. That was not rehearsed at all.
Nope.
What we're going to do, guys, is... We need reviews. We over thousands of people per week, which we're just shocked and amazed. And thank you for tuning in. Thousands of downloads a week we're getting already. But we need more. We need to get this out in front of more people. And so if you go to triberocket.com/iTunes, triberocket.com/iTunes. That will take you directly to iTunes, where you can go and leave a 5 or a 4-star review, or, you know, whatever you feel like. But here's the point. We're giving away, how much are these tickets worth, Mark?
there's no price. These are priceless tickets. So these are tickets to the annual OTC shrimp boil put on by National Oil Well Varco. You could not buy your way into this event. We have 10 of these to give away to our listeners.
Okay, 10, okay, people. And there's thousands of you that are going to listen to this podcast. So if you want to get in on this event, then go to tryrocket.com/iTunes. You might have to create yourself an Apple account, but it's going to be worth it because we're giving away 10 of these. So you know, don't miss out because, like I said, you know, that's a fractional number compared to the amount of downloads we're getting, which is awesome. So that is the call to action.
Yeah, and let me just throw this out real quick in case you don't know how important the shrimp boil is. Only oil and gas people get in this. You're going to be sitting at a table eating some of the best boiled shrimp and potatoes you've ever had in your life. The guy next to you has a $20 billion a year budget. He's a senior VP at National Oil Well. The guy on the other side of you, chugging down the beer and eating shrimp with you, he works for ExxonMobil. He's in charge of upstream for North America. These are the type of people you'll be rubbing elbows with and eating shrimp with.
Yeah, so get on it, people. tryrocket.com/iTunes. Give us a review. We love the 5 and 4, but whatever you got, we'll get you entered in. And if we get more than 10, hopefully we'll get 20. We'll just pick 10 at random. So go and do that. In the meantime, anything else, Mark?
Nope. Do great work. Pay it forward. And we will see you next time.
Go find some grease, guys. One babe caught a glimpse of those rims after a Cinderella concert in 86.
And she couldn't get in the back seat quick enough.